My name is Bertie Brazin, and it's lovely to meet you, and thank you so much for bringing me in. I'm from Tralee originally. I'm not living in Tralee at the moment. I'm living outside of Tralee, but I was living in Dublin for the last 6 years. And recently I've been doing mainly social media content creation, but I'm also an author as well. So I've written a book about Brian Boru, The Battle of Clontarf. That's out now on Amazon. But my foundational experience was in filmmaking and acting, and so that's kind of who I am and what I'm doing, you know.
Well, it's funny you actually bring that up, because where I found you was TikTok.
Yeah.
And again, that's all about filming and everything. You wouldn't kind of think those two would coincide, but it works. So you tell me a bit about you getting involved with TikTok, number one.
Yeah, so 2022 was when I first started doing stories on TikTok. And that was after, obviously, we all know what happened up leading up to that point, the few years of crazy stuff. So I kind of went through a bit of a transitionary period, because I was kind of working in a kind of a regular job during that whole period leading up to that. And I was kind of, because I was a filmmaker and an actor before that, I kind of fell out of love with all of that world. And then COVID happened, and then I was just kind of, I didn't really know what to do. So I was all, that creative thing was always in me. I was telling my partner recently, actually, I gave up for about 18 months, but that I was getting more and more depressed because I just need to be producing things, you know. And then I just realized, you know, I was watching TikTok, and I just said to myself, you know, people are just telling, kind of just getting on there telling stories. And I know there was a little phase of just dancing around on TikTok, and it was a bit silly, still can be, but there was people telling stories and stuff. And I said, oh, I might actually just start telling a few stories. And then the first one was Scotia, Queen Scotia from Scotia's Glen.
Yeah.
And that I expected to tell that story for local people that would know me. You know what I mean? That's who I was telling it to. Little did I know that it was the rest of the world that was interested, and no one from Tralee, you know.
Yeah.
So I had everybody on to me, and it went viral. And then that was the start of that. And that was in 2022. And I just started telling stories, all about Irish history, mythology and folklore.
And you kind of specialise in that a bit, do you?
I have no formal education in history.
You're but just interested.
I'm absolutely hugely passionate. Like, so I've always been passionate. My main research was Brian Boru from around 2014, around the millennium celebration of the Battle of Clontarf. They won, but he died. But it was 2014 where they're having 1,000 years celebration. That's kind of when I started getting really into it. Because of my filmmaking background, I felt like Brian Boru wasn't, you know, that film should be told. Still isn't, and it's still an ongoing thing for me. So that's how I kind of got into history in a big way. And then I just started realizing, like, Irish history, mythology and folklore is so deep and rich. There's such a tapestry of a huge amount of stories. The history alone is so complex and storyful. But then you get into the mythology and then the folklore. It's just insane. So that's, I mean, it's just an endless creative inspiration.
But I think what's really nice about the whole, like, mythology and folklore as well is, like, the picture it paints in your head as well.
Yeah, 100%.
It's magic.
Oh, it's unreal. Like, so for instance, even my historical fiction, which is based on a script that I almost got started producing, which was about Brian Boru, the Battle of Clontarf. We almost had the money, but it fell through. Even the way I wrote that, it's adapted from the screenplay. So when you're writing a screenplay, it's all very visual, the scenes, the imagery, and I have a lot of supernatural elements in it. So I'm always thinking of history in that way, like a cinema. It's just cinema. Like, the whole lot of it is, like, you know, and it's just a pity that the film industry don't do more to present it or to give it to us, because it's right there, you know?
Yeah, literally. And, like, I think one thing that I'm fascinated about is fairy forts and finding a bit more out about them, because there's plenty of them in Kerry as well, isn't
there?
There's
loads. They're all over the country, and there's loads. The one in North Kerry that people probably don't know about, and it's a very hard one to pronounce, Saint Dahlina. It's then other people have Dahleen, and she's out on Kerry Head, and it's a very difficult holy well to get to. So it's kind of, if you're going around Kerry Head and you're coming back around, say, towards Causeway, and the story, even just about her, like, it's just, it's like, if you took the Christianity out of it, it's like some sort of kind of fantasy, like, you know, she...
So what's that story?
It's basically, she was a young girl that was kind of protecting this kind of old building, like a monastery, kind of a church thing. And she was very into it. She just really wanted to protect it. And there was these kind of marauder young fellas that were coming along trying to destroy it. and they ended up coming and destroying him. But there is this kind of dark element, kind of like a fairy tale. Like there is this other sinister undercurrent that maybe they were up to more as well. They don't go into that in the story. That's the thing about folklore as well. There's always that real darkness to it as well, but they don't quite say it. But when they did it and they did whatever they did, I think they destroyed the place, maybe attacked her. She, because she was a kind of magical girl, she put a spell on them and they all went blind. And then they were like pleading and they were like, they would offer them their services. They would do anything just to get the blindness away. And she said, look, go over to the well and or go over to this water and just put it on your face. And they all were cured. And that's why people go there for cures and things like that. A lot of the holy wells are like that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is a lovely, I've retold that now probably in a very terrible way. But if people really want to search it, it actually is written down in the National Folklore Library, kind of. There's a folklore library online. It's very easy to get. And there was these children that actually wrote it in the most beautiful calligraphy that you have going, like, and it's up there. So if you want to read the story, just search it.
For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Now, Bertie, what we're going to talk about now is kind of some facts that you said people probably wouldn't know about Kerry.
Yeah.
I was flicking through it and I was kind of like, yeah, I know that and I know that. But there was things I didn't know.
Right.
And the one that kind of stood out to me most was the Guinness family.
Yeah.
And Mocker's House. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise to me now, I'll be honest with you, because I'd never actually been into Mocker's House, and I went over with my partner recently and we just said, look, we'll go in, and it was so quiet, so it was perfect timing. The first bust that you see when you go in is Lord Ardilaun, which is a title that they honoured themselves with, the Guinness family, you know. Well, this particular one was Edward or Arthur Guinness? I'm pretty sure it was Edward, actually. So he would have been one of the ones in the House of Guinness. He's the one, the Edward Cecil. I'm pretty sure it's him. But they owned it from 1899 till for about 12 years. And the weird thing is, they didn't even use it as a residence. They used it as a hunting lodge and a fishing lodge. So they never even stayed there as a primary residence. They had their own...
They almost didn't need it.
They didn't need it. They had Ashford, I think it's Ashford Castle or something was their primary residence. But in saying that, the Guinness family is very weird because they were kind of like, for me, they're like a de facto royal family or something, kind of a weird thing about it. Like they had so much wealth and a lot of dodgy stuff. But then there was a lot of good things that they did as well, because they reckoned that Mocker's House was gone into such disrepair at the time because of Queen Victoria's visits. That because they were like the people that owned it before, they were putting up so much money just to please her, basically, because she stayed there a few times. Or at least she stayed there for a while, I think. She stayed there once, but then for a long extended period of time, ruined them. So then the Guinness family, when they came in, even though they didn't use it as a primary residence, because they had so much money, they redid the whole place. So even though they weren't living there, they actually helped keep it in existence.
Amazing.
It's amazing. So it's the first bust you see when you go in on the tour, Lord Ardilaun. And then there's another statue of him in another place as well.
Okay.
So yeah.
So other facts then was, you had something about the Dingle Peninsula. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, Cashel Murphy. So all the Murphys are delighted with themselves. You know, they got lots of Murphys in the comments saying, yeah, that's my castle. So Cashel is kind of castle is a derivative of Cashel. Like it comes from Cashel. Cashlaw and Cashel. So the stone structure that you see now, there is, you know, people coming in the comments and they put me on. So social media will humble you as well from time to time. The stone that's there isn't older than the pyramids of Egypt, but the site is most likely older than the pyramids of Egypt because archaeological digs prove it to be so. There's a lot of people that are absolutely 100% sure that they're older than the pyramids of Egypt. So they reckon the stones that are there now are built upon the actual the architectural design of what was there beforehand. So they reckon that the actual solar eclipses, I think it's the, sorry, not solar eclipses, what am I on about? The equinox, and I think it's spring and autumn. Is that there's a certain part of the cashel of the stone where the sun shines in to through a little passage and lights up a little design at the back of one of the passages.
Okay.
So they reckon that this cashel isn't just a dwelling, it's actually a type of calendar for the ancients.
Okay. And is that why it's like...
It's very weird, isn't it?
It's just the way it looks. You kind of have like one big circle.
Yeah.
And you kind of have almost half a circle here, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, yeah. six small circles.
It's, you know what's most likely? It's a ceremonial site, I reckon. Like, you know, a lot of people, they're saying, oh, it's just dwellings. And, you know, there's a lot of this kind of, sometimes I feel with mainstream history, it's a lot of just kind of writing off of the importance of things.
Yeah.
But when it's quite clear that this is very unusual, like the thickness of those walls, and it just seems a bit like strange. Because even, say, if you go to the other, like, Skellig, of the Skellig Michael, and see those beehive huts, and you see the one, the very famous one on Dingle Peninsula as well, Gallus Oratory, it just, this looks a bit different to that. Because it's when you look down on it, as you're pointing out there, you can see what it actually is. It's some sort of sundial, you know what I mean? Like a rudimentary ancient sundial, you know? So... the site is older than the pyramids of Egypt, right? And it does light up. I'm pretty sure, please correct me if anyone's watching this, I'm pretty sure it's the spring and autumn equinox. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
What's it like when you research these pieces and you find out this information?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I was growing up I spent a lot of time on the Dingle Peninsula growing up. So obviously I would love the Dingle Peninsula. And, you know, my father would always tell me these little stories and stuff, especially around Connor Pass and stuff. And I would have spent a lot of my summers fishing at the foot of Brandon Mountain. If you're looking down into Connor Pass, you know, that's where I used to fish. So I was always enraptured by little kind of fragments of stories and stuff. And since I've gotten older, since I've started doing the social media, and since I've kind of, matured, I guess, I'm appreciating more these places. And it's obviously, these places are deeper for me now. Because I guess when you're younger, everything's a bit superficial. And then you get older, it gets a little bit more deep. So I'm kind of just interested in these places, the stories that they have. Maybe it's the creative mind that I have. I'm always kind of looking for something to imagine, you know. Mm. And I just think like there's just so many places. I always say in my comments, it's like, every place that in Ireland, wherever you're from, just look a bit deeper. There's a story everywhere. There's a story in every field, you know. Now, I know these ones are like very grand and stuff, but even I went up to Brasna recently, and that's my ancestral homeland, Brasnen, you know, that's where we come from, you know. And people might think, oh, Brasna, there's nothing there, there's nothing happening, but there's loads there. There's a holy well there. You know, there was a big, huge active centre during the War of Independence. Mm. You know, there's so many different things there. Like, you know, so just as an example, I feel as I get older, I appreciate these things more.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure. And I suppose what you're kind of saying there as well is, if there is anyone listening to this, maybe look around you and see what you have.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, people are so quick. And I know Ireland's going through a hard time, and we're a big emigration country. Like, we always want to leave. And I did. I left myself. I went away for a year to the States. But I got this feeling like I need to go back, like, you know. And I do feel like, yes, we're going through economic hard times and things are very difficult, you know. But Jesus, Ireland has so much to offer people. And I know it's hard, and people need to make money. They need to survive. They need to, you know, have better lives. But I just think there's so much here for people, sustenance, you know, for the soul, for the mind. And I know there's people out there who are like, ah, sure, that doesn't feed you.
Yeah.
But maybe it does, you know. Mm. You know, maybe it does. It certainly does me. And there's a lot of people listening to me and listening to other great content creators, and they're getting a huge amount out of it. And I think they're getting inspired to go out and look for these stories as well, you know. So
yeah.
I think it's important people, you know, take a good look around you.
Mm-hmm. You know? You said in the comments people kind of humble you. So are people coming to you with some stories as well that you're figuring out now?
Well, look, I'll be honest, right? So for instance, there's some of the things that I look as factual, but then there's other people that will put, you know, there's certain people that are very technical about certain things, and they're correct. Like, for instance, the one, Mount Brandon is the second highest mountain in Ireland, right? So, okay, that should be reworded the second highest mountain range in Ireland, because the Mhigillicuddy Reeks has other peaks within it that are higher than actual Mount Brandon peak.
Okay, so I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either. So, but the hikers know it. The people that are doing this every weekend, they know it. And they say, no, there are peaks right next to Cairn too. And I was like... But for us lay people, we're not looking for those peaks. We're looking at Cairn Tool, right?
Yeah.
So they say that Brandon Mountain is technically the ninth highest peak, but it's the second highest prominent mountain. And then as a differentiation, it's distinct from Mhigillicuddy Reeks because it's a separate range. So that is the second highest mountain range. Mm. And then we have the two highest mountain ranges in Ireland, in Kerry. So that's the difference. I should have put that down instead of highest mountain.
But you're saying it now, so we
get the difference. So social media does humble you from time to time. Yeah,
of course it does.
Yeah, yeah.
And tell me, now this might be a stupid question, maybe I should know already, and I brought it up to someone during the weekend, and you mentioned the Connor Pass there. Who is Connor?
It's a great question. Now, you know, my father, I did a dirty to my father before, because I remember saying on a podcast before, I said, oh, my father's telling me a silly story about a hiking. And I said, I don't think it was true. And then he pulled me aside after. He goes, it is true. And I'm just like, I couldn't really find it. It actually is true. King Conair. So I'm pretty sure it's around the time of Fionn MacCool, but maybe it's slightly before or after. It's been a while since I read those stories now. But Fionn MacCool is attached to Connor Pass. But Connor Pass, they reckon, is based on the hiking King Conair around the same time period of Fionn MacCool. So what do I know huge amounts about King Conair off the top of my head? Don't at the moment. All I know is that there's a link between, you know, with Fionn MacCool, because he would have had that big battle in Ventry over the other side of Connor Pass. But King Conair was a very prominent High King, and he's not really in the historical role of High Kings. He's more in the mythological role of High Kings, you know. So King Conair is connected to the mountain, yeah.
Again, it's just kind of looking into the place names as well, isn't it?
Do you know what it is? Sorry to cut across you.
Yeah.
It's an ancient roadway. So you have to remember, these places were so, you know, they were very important, like, because we're so used to our roadways, our boreens, our you know, our motorways. We don't realise that at those times there was only very few paths. So these were very important, and it's territorial, and there's a lot of different, you know, whoever owned that was the, you know, they had, I don't know, was there taxations? There was all sorts of things going on. But Connor Pass is an ancient roadway, like. So this was known for thousands of years. So maybe King Conair had some sort of ownership of that place, you know what I mean? It would make sense, you know?
Do you think that's why a lot of people dread driving that road?
I think, yeah, they do. I don't.
Because I do.
I can understand why. It's very scary, but it used to be a lot scarier. It was a lot narrower before. But we've been going up there for years. Like, we've been going up there since we were kids. Like, so we just don't, I don't take any notice. But it is, I would say to anybody coming driving and experiencing that for the first time, it's hectic. Because I guess, like, if I go to another country and experience India or even France, the Champs-Élysées, going into the Lac du Triomphe, they reckon if you get onto that roundabout there, your life is in your own hands. So it's kind of like that, I guess. Connor Pass, you know.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's just interesting. And someone had brought it up to me as well, like, really look into place names. But
yes,
you know, some names to this day I can't pronounce. And there's one back kind of going Glenbay direction, Winnifuca. I love that name.
Yeah.
But if I could pronounce it properly, I'd even love it more.
Guineguilla.
Yeah, I can't.
And the spelling.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. And then actually the Brosna thing, that's because our surname is, it's only one of 10 locative surnames. So there's around 10 to 12, they reckon 10, but some say 12, surnames that are based on actual places.
Okay, and so what's an example of some of them?
So mine's an example, Brosna. And then, oh, jeez, what's the example? Glynn. Pretty sure Glynn is one. Glynn is one, actually, 100%. Santry.
Okay.
Because Santry's in Dublin. There's a few more, but there's only around 10. Now, there's one guy who I really respect, Michal, Clans and Dynasties. He says that I'm completely incorrect. But I was sure that I heard this before. And I looked into it. No, I'm pretty sure that's the truth. Like, you know, there's only around 10 to 12 of them. I think it's to do with, I'm not too sure why that came about, because usually it was always the son of the grandfather, the son of the father. But for some reason, they were put onto the lands for some reason. So maybe it's not really a good thing. You know what I mean? It might have been displaced people or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
So because they were the people of that place. Now, others would say Brosna, the river Brosna was where we were from, but I'm pretty sure it's the village of Brosna.
Mm.
But yeah, so there you go.
Bertie, do you find it, like, amazing nowadays, like, as you say, like, TikTok are really getting on board with the whole idea of this and kind of wanting to explore a bit more? Like,
absolutely.
I suppose if you asked yourself 10 years ago, did you have any interest in this, you would have said no.
No.
Whereas now it's completely different. Why do you think it's changed?
It's changed because people want, I was thinking about this, actually. I think people love little bits of information, you know, and people like to, you see, people do love to learn, but they want to be inspired. They want to be, they want to get, they want to be, there needs to be emotion. I think that was why I never really liked school, because it just felt it was so dry, and I regret it because, but at the same time, I understand it, because it's like, history never really hit with me when in school, like, because it was so dull, you know. But really it isn't, you know. And I think now what's happening with people is they're relearning. I can only talk about from a history perspective, but I do watch other genres in on TikTok and YouTube and stuff. And I just think storytelling is the foundation of all of it, you know. And people love stories. We live on stories. Everything is a story, like, you know. And it's not just Irish people, it's everywhere. But Irish people have a special talent at it, like, you know. But I think that's what it is, you know. Like, a film is a story. Now people have little films on their phone that they can just keep, you know, they don't have to
get
bored.
And they're in nuggets, like,
exactly,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's beautiful, like, you know. People think, you know, TikTok. And yeah, everything has bad and good. I personally think it is bad in one way, especially if there's kids on them all day, every day. But I remember a time when we used to spend half a day on a PlayStation, but then we used to go half the day outside and play soccer. Mm-hmm. Some days we played football outside for a whole day. Some days we stayed inside all day on the PlayStation. So I think, you know, I think it's up to the parents as well as the kids. But the point is, I'm saying, is like, it can be brain rot. But at the same time, it is a great tool as well. You kind of have to manage yourself. You can't stay on it all day. But if you're going with a bit of intention into social media, it's a fantastic thing. And I've learned so much. And I'm learning all the time. Like, I as I mentioned earlier on, there's some great content creators, Irish history content creators, all sorts of content creators. And I see there's newer content creators now that are happening. I'm learning from them, and I try to support them as well, because I can see that some of them are doing way better stuff than me. Like, do you know what I mean? They're putting so much effort in, like, really, like, trying to create cinematic little bits of nuggets, you know, and fair play to them, like.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Tell me, if people want to follow you, Bertie, how can you do it? What's your socials?
Yeah, so I have a new website, www.bertiebrosnan.com. So everything's on there. So you have links to my YouTube playlists and stuff. Obviously, you can go onto my YouTube at Bertie Brosnan. But everything's kind of on my website, bertiebrosnan.com, and you have the socials all there. But they can go across my social media. It's either Bertie Brosnan Films, that's on Instagram and Facebook, and then at Bertie Brosnan on YouTube, TikTok, or go to the website.
Yeah, perfect. Bertie, it's been really fascinating, but we'll definitely have to get you back on sometime during storytelling and things like that.
Gora míle maith agat, Acara.
Thank you.
Thank you.